Hey everyone, this is Ashley, producer of the OpStars podcast. Today we're bringing you a special episode featuring a live session recorded at OpStars 2023 in San Francisco. Enjoy.
Well, wonderful. Thanks for joining, folks. We still have a couple coming in the back, but we'll get started. We've got kind of a bit of a talk track. I'm not going to be doing a lot of talking. I'm going to be the one asking the questions under the bright lights with the cigarette, you know, to these guys. And so we'll start with some introductions, but then we're going to talk about what comes after RevOps. And Evan alluded to it in the keynote, where RevOps continues to get elevated, roles like COO, like Jake and I, and then things like Kern's doing, where moving into the venture capital world. So we'll talk about that. And then we might have a couple minutes at the end we'll save for some Q&A. But let's start with maybe some quick introductions. We'll start with Jake. Your name, what you do, your favorite flavor of ice cream, all that stuff.
Okay. Jake Randall. Favorite flavor of ice cream is vanilla. I think anyone can make, you know, you put like cookie dough in ice cream.
Oh, right.
Vanilla is actually where ice cream shines, but we can talk about that later. So I'm the COO of a company called Common Room. We're a startup backed by Greylock and Index. And before Common Room, I spent 10 years at a company called Okta. So I built a 50-person RevOps team at Okta, and then I went on to run a sales team for us, an enterprise sales team, and then be GM of one of their two main product lines before leaving to be COO at Common Room.
Right on. Hey, everyone. Karan Singh, partner at Sapphire Ventures. I'll go a little bit into my background before I do ice cream flavor. I think I can top vanilla, by the way. Anything with like a little brownie fudge swirl in it, oh man, I'm done. So that's
cheating, because that of course it's gonna be delicious.
Dude, you're lowest comp.
We're talking about ice cream. We're not talking about baked goods.
All right. This is already getting kind of confrontational. This is good.
Such a bad idea to go down the ice cream path. Yeah.
A little bit about my background. So partner again at Sapphire Ventures. I run our revenue excellence function. So think I'm effectively managing, curating, supporting our broader go-to-market community. I spend time with our 75 to 100 portfolio companies, giving them guidance on all things go-to-market. Before Sapphire, where I've been there for about a year and a half, 2 years, I was actually a go-to-market operator, revenue operations leader for companies like Procore, Cloudera, and ArcSight. All three of them had a pretty fun journey where I got to come in reasonably early, help them go through that public event, which is just an event, it's not the event, and then continue forward from there. And I get to take a lot of those same learnings and translate them into the work I do today. So it should be fun to talk about how and some of the commonalities, and excited to share.
Wonderful. Well, thank you both for being here. Let's start with something that came up in the keynote a couple times. We didn't really dig into it, but this notion of mentorship came up. And so I'd be curious, in both your situations, did you experience a good mentorship early in your career, later in your career? How did that help get you to where you are?
Sure, I'll go first. Short answer, yes. So I think mentors are hugely important. In my case, it's actually interesting, and maybe this is helpful into like what you do after RevOps, but my mentor wasn't a RevOps person. It was our COO, founder COO at Okta, and then we brought in a president of Worldwide Field Operations when we were getting ready to go public. And I think that was actually really important to me, and it's maybe like a piece of advice, like, part of this like advice, where do you go after RevOps, was finding someone, like if you want to be the VP of RevOps at a company, then like your mentor, sure, like make them the head of RevOps. If you want to theoretically go somewhere else after RevOps, then like find that person and really and have a relationship with them where they can help give you guidance as to what you might want to do. Maybe also like quickly give a story on that if that's helpful. So in my case, our president was like, hey, you could be like a president, but like you haven't spent enough time actually out in the field selling. I was always like a very customer-facing RevOps person at Okta. Why don't you go run a sales team for a couple of years for us? And that was something that, like, in my mind, was not something that I was thinking of doing, right? And we should talk about that, because I would suggest you all do that. I think it's easy as a RevOps person, like own sales ops, to like judge the sales team. It's different when you actually carry a quota, to be clear. I think you get a lot of empathy. Empathy is probably the most important thing in any job. But that kind of mentorship for me was really helpful in my journey. Someone saying, okay, like, you're here. What do you actually want to go do? And let me try to like build some paths for you to go get that experience. And so that's, I guess, how I think about mentorship ultimately is like, where do you want to go and how can they open doors for you?
No, I love that. Similar, by the way, I've been fortunate. I think, well, first of all, I would challenge anyone to tell me they've done anything special without somebody sort of surrounding them and helping and supporting, right? So that to me is not a controversial statement. Similar, Jake, to you, the mentors I've had have been a mixture. There's certainly been some RevOps leaders, COOs, and otherwise CEOs that I've been aspiring to, looking up to, and they were all, beautiful thing was they all gave me a little bit of a different perspective on how to think about career progression, how to think about what's next, and also how they saw the value of revenue operations while I was in that role. So I think that's spot on. So diversity is important in terms of your mentorship network. The other thing I would say, because I think Jake nailed it in terms of the importance of, but the other thing I would say is, and I had a mentor tell me this early days, is that there's two different types of mentors, right? There's the ones that are in seat in company with you, and they exist, right? The CEO, the COO, the RevOps leader. They're great. They'll open up paths for you within the company. They'll teach, train, develop, all that's fine and good. And you should have those. But his belief was that great mentors are the ones that are not within the same company. The ones that have actually no get, they just get to give, if that makes sense, right? And that's a different sort of relationship as well. And so I made that a point as well as I continue to progress my career, is that the mentors I had in prior companies, when I left those companies, I made sure to stay close and connected with. When I was within a company, I was asking everybody and anyone like, hey, who do you know that's good and great? And how can I connect with intentionally to have somebody that I was not, you know, reporting to, or we were fighting the same good fight internally. And that diversity of thought as well and perspective was also super meaningful. So I do agree. Go after and find mentors that are maybe in the skill and the role that you want, but also look outside of the organization you're within. And the two things together actually lead some pretty interesting outcomes as well. So yes, mentors are important.
Two yeses, love it. You both were in RevOps, and in Jake's case, you took a little side path to go run a sales team, but ultimately moving out of RevOps into a different role. Tell us how you kind of thought about the potential risks of moving to something like that, whether it was because of the magnitude of the step or just getting out of your comfort zone. And let's start with you, Kern, because maybe less of a stereotypical projection, right? RevOps to an operating role, like shifting over to the venture world. How did you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, I think for starters, I love the word risk. I mean, you know, some people kind of pucker a little bit when they hear risk and they want to run away from, you got to run to the fight. Let's start with that, right? And just having that philosophy is important. So yeah, I mean, I'm sure you felt it too. There were some risky moments where you're like, oh man, if I do this wrong, oh boy, I'm going to lose X, Y, and Z. So in that respect, yeah, absolutely. I think being not just mindful of risk, but being aware of the importance of risk was a piece of it. The other thing was, you know, when I spent time with great leaders, they all told me something similar, which was that, and I want to say this tactfully, if we look across the room, there's probably a lot of RevOps leaders here and RevOps professionals. The reality is they're all exceptional. There's a lot of exceptional talent out there. Everyone knows how to think about go-to-market strategy to some degree. Conferences like Lean Data's, OpStars help with some of those things, et cetera. So a lot of folks have the right skills. Do you have the competencies on the other side, though, right? Do you have executive presence? What does that even mean, right? Do you have a sense of how to control a boardroom? How do you actually even get there? So how do you build your brand outside of the immediate circles and walls of your existing company? So I've had people sort of think through that with me and help me understand that, look, to stand out, you have to do those other things, those ancillary things, those things that are uncomfortable. And when I was first sort of going to the speaking circuit, that was not something, I'm a deep introvert, not interesting to me, but I knew the importance of, right? And knowing how to take some of those risks and understanding the value of it was sort of the foundation. And then my opinion is that you'd be surprised once you have that willingness and that openness, how many of those opportunities just start to pop up for you. And you just have to say yes. So awareness was a piece of it. Understanding that that's what's differentiating was another piece. And then from there, just going for it.
What about you, Jake?
I kind of alluded to my story. I'll just maybe spend a bit more time on my story. So to piggyback on what you're just saying, I'm sure everyone here is great at their job, you know, can whatever, build capacity plans and, you know, figure out ICPs and do all the fun things you get to do. Ultimately, the question I would say is like, what do you actually want to do, right? I think for lots of RevOps folks, because you're working so closely with a CMO or a sales leader or a, you know, chief customer officer or whatever it may be, you're like, well, I could do that job, right? Like, it's just the reality of it, right? Like, and so what I'd encourage people to think about is like, if you want to go do that job, then like go take the risk and go try it. And this is, again, goes back to the mentor concept of someone who can help you think about, well, what would I need to do to explore that, to get my feet in the door, to try that out? Because ultimately, you being really good at RevOps doesn't mean you can do a boardroom or be customer facing or do all those things, right? That's just close deals. Like, that's just fundamentally not what the job is. And so figuring out how to get exposure to that becomes, I think, really important as you think about your career trajectory. So the corollary to that, which is the question, which is that comes with a lot of risk, right? Because, you know, my personal story is our president was like, hey, I'm going to promote you to SVP, you know, of RevOps, all these kinds of things. It's going to be great. I probably should have done that. I would have got a bunch more stock, made a bunch more money. But I said, nope, I want to go do something else in my career. He's like, okay, well, like, as we've talked about, you should go run a sales team. So I moved to Chicago and I built a sales team from 3 people to 120, right? And the whole thing was, I was like adamant. I was like, but I'm going to take a quota. And if I don't make quota, you're going to fire me. Right? And that's like really scary, right? That's a massive shift in like your risk profile in terms of what you're doing, but ultimately taking those risks and saying, no, like I can go do this and I'm going to put my money where my mouth is, then lets you have different conversations where like, okay, how to become like COO of this like startup, right? Is that because they said, okay, well, Jake has this great reputation. Yeah, he's the speaker stuff like you do, right? At like RevOps, but also he went and like beat quota. And then he was like a GM, right? And so like you have to make that choice at some point around like what do you want to take on to get to where you think you might want to play, you know, in your ultimate career. Because I think the other side of probably the mentorship side, like conversation and risk is like, they're not just going to give it to you. Yeah. You still have to like prove yourself and you've got to take on that risk to prove yourself. And finding great mentors will give you the opportunity to go prove yourself, but they're never going to be given anything. And that's where like the risk part comes in. And that's where that almost like contract is how I think of it with that mentor or whatever it may be is really important. Hey, I'm so grateful for you to give me this opportunity. And like, yeah, it's risky, right?
By the way, and totally true, I'll add one more thing. So I just broadly, and there may be some folks that are like, hey, I just want to be a career operator. This is what I like.
Which is also fine.
Which is great, right? I've known a lot of people.
But the purpose of this talk is what do you do when you're not doing RevOps?
Yeah, exactly. But even if that's the case, diversity of experience is so important, even in the roles that you're in. So like the example I would give you is in between my operating stints between ArcSight, Cloudera, and Procore, I went with one of my mentors and we started a consulting practice together, right? Same sort of focus area of revenue operations, go to market strategy, you know, deals, well, that, but we got to kind of build it from soup to nuts. And all of a sudden I was in kind of that similar spot where now I'm not just in the back working on my craft and discipline. I'm standing in front of a prospect and trying to get them to close this deal with me and showcasing value and helping them understand and, right? Not a behavior I was comfortable and familiar with, and not actually something I was expecting to happen initially. That was probably lack of foresight on my end as well. But all of a sudden, having those experiences, even when I came back to that core RevOps discipline, man, I thought about it differently. All of a sudden, I wasn't thinking about, hey, what are the processes and the structured sales process? I was thinking about, well, no, revenue, That's what we care about. So everything else is a form factor too. And even that mindset shift came from some of those sort of diversity of experiences. And so I would challenge everyone to consider that. But I do think it's also a great launch pad for what you want to do next too.
We can keep building on this conversation. I think empathy is probably the most important thing in any job. And so what I hear when you say that is building empathy. And so again, I'll use, I know, like a cliche thing that I'm sure everyone in this room does as a RevOps professional. You're running a forecast call or something, right, with your sales leader, and you're like, what the fuck? Like, you messed up, sorry. What the fuck? You messed up medic. Like, why don't you know, like, why can't you forecast,
your
right?
Next steps.
You're an idiot. Why don't you have next steps figured out? Why didn't you figure out that there was, you know, who the EB, whatever, right? Go put yourself in the shoes of a sales leader, and you're trying to like grind, unless I keep swearing, the shit out of this deal to get it in for the quarter, right? And like, you have a whole new perspective then on what it means to forecast a deal, how that process works. And it lets you ultimately then be a much better RevOps professional if that's what you want to do, because you actually understand how it works, and that, you know, a multi-million dollar deal isn't closed because what you filled out in Medic in Salesforce, right? And I think that's something that like you don't really understand until you do it. And so I think that's just, I guess, like to build off what you said, is that corollary of it doesn't mean you have to go do whatever, work at a VC or have some other role at a company. It's like, that diversity will ultimately help you understand what you might want to do, but also help you understand how to be better at the job that you're doing today.
Can't hurt.
Can't hurt.
I'm curious, now that you've both moved officially out of the world of RevOps, when you're looking at different parts of the business, in your case, Jake and Kern, when you're looking at different companies in the portfolio, how much are you focusing on ops because that's what you know, as opposed to it looks like it's working okay and these other parts of organizations need some love? How do you balance that?
Yes, sir.
I mean, so like I'll talk to a couple, I think like in my current job, I run everything that's not engineering and product. I was just talking to Kieran. I have 7 direct sales reps reporting to me, which is as well as marketing. And I need to, so if anyone knows a great sales leader, please send them my way. I think probably to a fault, honestly, I don't focus on ops because that's something to me that's, I don't know, easy to make a diving catch on, for lack of a better way to say it, right? And like that's more intuitive for me, where I think anytime, I don't know, my whole thing is like if you're doing something, like focus on your weaknesses to some level, like I can always fall back to my strength, but I need to spend more time, whatever. Same with my marketing leader, who's great, but like understanding what are we doing from a content marketing standpoint, right? This may surprise you. Your average RevOps person is not like the best content marketer, right? And so like I tend to spend more time on that and really try to understand those areas more, because those areas are where it's harder for me to like be able to just like jump in and help right away. I think it's a little different maybe if you're looking at like your next role in terms of like evaluating what company you might want to go work at, because everyone in this room has a huge advantage over like they actually understand those building blocks of a company. And so when you're trying to figure out what company should I go to and like the risk profile of all that, my guess is that all of you would ask better questions around the health of that business than, you know, the sales leader that you're all going to send me after this talk.
Yeah. So the question is essentially like, how much am I leaning on my RevOps discipline, practice, experience? To some degree, yes, and maybe a little bit different in VC land than it is for, you know, being in seed operating, where, you know, that superpower is part of the reason why Sapphire wanted me as part of the team, right? Is because I can see during due diligence and otherwise, or when I go deeper into companies, perhaps something that an average investor wouldn't, because they're not steeped in it the same way. Having said that, while I can go in and say, let me look at your territories and your forecasts and your pipeline and your infrastructure, all that, it's actually not generally what I do. I think it's more like, I almost think of myself as like a capital O operator. You know, if it's oversimplified in VC land, there's investors, there's operators, there's some investors that are ex-operators, but generally there's a little bit of a wall between the two, right? So good and great operators have sort of a sense check within the health of a company as well. You all can probably tell. You do this in your first 30, 60, 90 within a company anyways, right? So a lot of those behaviors and habits are still very relevant. And broadly, we're all like, what is the average profile of a revenue ops leader, go-to-market strategy leader? They're pretty progressive in terms of logical, and they kind of sequence their thought process, and they're problem solvers fundamentally, right? Now, the how is a form factor, and there's a bunch of different ways. Everybody has different ways that they approach it within RevOps discipline. But my point is, like, if you think of yourself more as a broader operator, that problem solver that has a little bit of a sense check and a stiff check in a different way than, say, an investor does, then you just got to make sure how you know how to marry your expertise with them. So I know that's a little bit of a convoluted answer, but the short answer is it's not always the same copy-paste, but if you go down to first principles, go down to what it is that you've been able to solve for with RevOps, those things still apply. And then occasionally it bursts up and it's about, hey, let's go deep into the pipeline or let's go deep into X, Y, and Z. And that's certainly valuable as well. So hopefully that makes a little bit of sense. It's a mixture of both.
That's great. I could keep asking questions. We've got a couple minutes. I bet the audience has a couple of questions that they'd like to ask of you two gents. So we'll open it up for maybe two questions. Don't be shy.
All right, Mike.
Mike's coming.
Awesome. I sound super loud. I'm sorry. Do I? Or am I just in front of the speaker? Okay, sorry. Cool. So our company, we have, I guess worst case, a babysitter, best case, operational support from our VCs as well. And so my question is, like, when I take that call every quarter as the RevOps guy that puts together the materials for that, what kind of proactive things do you like to see brought to that meeting versus like taking one look and being like, this guy's a moron?
You can take that. You're the babysitter.
So let me just make sure I'm clear on the question. By the way, great question. Clear on the question. So you're saying that you have some sort of operating partner advisor in that VC firm that, you know, you're pressure testing some stuff off of. Is that essentially it? And you want to know? Yep. Yeah, I mean, look, one, every VC firm is a little bit different. And so I think you also have to know who and what you're, you know, in bed with, so to speak, right? For example, at Sapphire, whenever I go into and have a conversation with a portfolio company, I'm very clear. Look, there's a brick wall between me and the investor team. And I, when I joined, that was one of my requirements. Like, look, this is not a tell current everything, I swivel chair over and tell the investor and therefore and thusly, right? It doesn't work that way. We want it to be truly value add. If it's an instance like that, actually, what I typically tell my companies is that, look, you can get to 40% readiness and send something my way. In fact, I prefer that so that I help you show up really well in front of the board and show up really well in board meetings and help you actually tune your strategy, et cetera, et cetera. And the benefit for me, because it's not all altruistic, is, right, that's the sort of engagement and relationship I want, right? Think about value selling. It's no different, right? Build a great relationship. It'll come back, right? And so if you have something like that, I mean, I would say it's more about, you know, seek to understand, be understood, be curious, be open, all those things. I'm sure there are instances where that's not the case and it is that, you know, sort of person helicoptering in and whatnot, in which case I would just say it's like any other board member in some way, shape or form. Yeah, you want to be completely buttoned up a week or two before. You want to be having those dinners and those calls to kind of feed them a little bit along the way, get them ready, no surprises, et cetera, et cetera. But I guess I'm really hopeful it's not that. It's more the former, because to me, then that is value add. The latter is a proctology exam, right? That's not as fun. That was probably not the word to use, but he's been swearing, so it's fine. So I think you have to kind of pressure test the environment a little bit before you make a decision on how to approach and engage.
I'm going to add one thing to that, which is, I think, similar vein. I don't have a babysitter. But I have a board that I have a board that I have to manage, and I think it's very similar. And I think the main thing I would maybe have tell you to think about is no one expects it to be perfect, right? Like if it was easy, if there was a playbook, then every company would go public. That's not how it works, unfortunately, for all of us that work in startups and software. And so I think the most important thing that I've found is come with questions in areas where you need help, where you don't have the answer, which kind of builds off of your point of transparency and where it's like, hey, this is where I could really use your help. This is where I think we're getting something wrong. This is where I'm not sure like what we should do, because like that's why they have the job that they have. And also it builds that trust, and then you can actually get something out of it versus like playing defense the entire call.
And by the way, to your point, great investors are that way too, right? So I always want you to be in the mindset of somebody who's on your board or an investor, right? So typically they're coming in, if it's not a great relationship or a really engaged one, once a quarter board meeting, you show up and throw up at them and they respond and react and then they pop back out, and then one quarter, like, there's no relationship to be had there, right? You're not getting help, support, et cetera. So it's a give and get. If you have a strong board, one that you respect and like, and they like you, more continuous engagement too never hurts, right? So it's a little bit of like, you also have to understand how to help them help you too, and that builds that relationship.
We're over time by 10 seconds.
11,
it's,
12.
It's counting up.
You're coming to tell us that there's only one question. That was the last question.
Yeah, so we can't take any more questions. There's another session coming, but these two gents are gonna be floating around, so feel free to track them down if you wanna talk to them one-on-one. Thank you for attending, and we'll let it roll to the next session. Thank you.
Thank you.
The OpStars podcast is brought to you by Lean Data. To find out more about us and our suite of Salesforce native products for marketing, sales, and revenue operations, head to leandata.com and then make sure to search for OpStars in Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Podcasts, or anywhere else that podcasts are found. Make sure to click subscribe so you don't miss on any future episodes. On behalf of the team here at OpStars and Lean Data, thanks for listening.